At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Don't miss your free chance to tune into Benzinga's very own bootcamp series on November 20th. If you're looking to dive into new concepts and grow your account, this one's for you.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
So, as I was saying, a lot to get to on the show. We have earnings, you know this. We have GE, probably our story of the day. We may get to, if we have time, Robinhood, LiDAR names ripping here. NVIDIA, AMD, there's just so much going on. Let's bring Joel on here. Joel, good morning. My head is spinning. I can't keep up with the market. Please bring up your charts for us and let us walk through them, and then we'll bring Dennis on.
Did I miss the intro?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I miss seeing downtown Detroit. All right. Let's see here. We're down six handles at 46.88. We made a new all-time closing high yesterday, but we didn't make a new all-time high. So that makes your 46.94. I'm going to call that the number for the remainder of the week. Down 5.75 handles at 46.88 and a quarter. Crude up 34 cents at 82.26. Just kind of hanging out here above 82. Let's see if we can hold 82 the remainder of the session. Gold down 2 tad, but still above 1,800. Silver stuck in the 24 handle. That's down about a dime at 24.44. Bitcoin futures up $1,570 at $68,055. Ethereum, that's up $35.75 at $48.35.5. We got to bring is Triple D ready to come on, or is right, he still?
I'm always okay. Ready.
He's always ready. How you doing, Dan? I feel.
I'm gonna tell you. You have so in trading, you know. There's and in the casino and everything, there's an edge, right? You're trying to trade the edge, and your edge might be 51%, it might be 52%. Maybe you got a kick ass edge, and it's 60%. You know, it's all about the edge, though. You're trying to take the edge, but on any edge. There's a random, you know, on any given trade, there's a little bit of luck involved. It's random good luck sometimes, and it's random bad luck sometimes. You know, we know I trade overnight. I often have 50, 100 positions overnight. Sometimes I don't have that many positions. I didn't trade much last night, so I didn't have very many positions. But I happen to be short one stock, and I want the chat to guess. Which stock do you think Dennis was short overnight? I'm already covered, so I can freely talk about it. But which stock do you think I was short overnight?
Drop your guesses in the chat.
Drop your guesses in the chat. And you can tell I'm in a bad mood kind of already, so you know I'm probably on the wrong side. And if Roblox would be a bad guess, because I don't take stocks usually short into earnings. It's usually going to be random news. And yeah, they're getting it now. Random news. Financial engineering hitting me in the pocketbook here this morning. I'll tell you that much, because yes, indeed, I was short General Electric overnight. Yes, indeed, I have covered General Electric already and ate my loss, because when you get hit with random news and you're short a stock overnight, what do? You eat the loss and you move on. And that is what I have done here. I came in, when I came in this morning, actually, I didn't get in here until late. It was 6:45. And I bring up my, you know, I'm bringing up my quotes and bringing up everything. And I look at GE and it's up 17 points. And I'm like, did it get taken over? I'm like, what? Like, it wasn't earnings. It wasn't on the calendar. And then I'm looking at the pro and I'm like, oh, splitting up into three companies, a little financial engineering trick. It was 125 when I came in this morning. I ended up getting out at 119.5. So I ended up getting out a little bit better. It's 117 now, so I guess I should have held on more. But show the pre-market chart of GE.
I got it.
That is an explosion. It was over 125. Yeah. Oh, I guess 125. So when that big purple candle happened there, I got out on that big purple candle and moved on. But wow, that's some bad luck. Yesterday it was short Caterpillar and a bunch of infrastructure stocks. That wasn't good. Today it's GE. So it's been a tough week. It's been a tough week.
Dennis,
people are saying you need to adjust your trading strategies. Absolutely not. So on any given thing, there's a random of luck. And if you try to start adjusting your strategies because you got a bad two-day run, but you have a history of the strategies of working well for years, you do not adjust those strategies. You continue to do them. If it was like, if it's something else going on, it's different, but you get hit with random news, that's not bad trading. That's bad luck. So there's a big difference between bad trading, bad strategies, and bad luck. And once you're in the game for 21 years, you can decipher it pretty quickly. Am I trading bad or am I having bad luck? I actually traded GE fairly well. It was 125 and I'm like, well, that's stupid. And then it came in and I saved myself 6 points. So, you know, only up losing 9 or whatever. You can say, oh, well, that's just, you know, a horrible trade. It's bad luck. So in any given thing, you're going to, if you trade enough, you are going to have some good luck and some bad luck. The key to successful trading around the luck is to maximize your gains when the luck is for you and to minimize your damage when it is against you. And that's what you got to do. That's how you've got to approach it. You know, you're going to have some good trades too. I mean, I was long Fisker overnight. I'm long Fisker in the long-term account, but I was also long it overnight. That's some good luck. It's one of my favorites. Up 6.5% here. So I've already sold that day trading portion. But I've still got my long-term account. I didn't touch it in my long-term account. But you can see on any given trade, there's some good luck there, a little bit of good luck. You try to maximize that as much as you can. So the worst thing you can do, and this is like what we like talking about is, you know, different strategies. The worst thing you can do is have a strategy that works like for you for the last year and you have a bad 2 days with it and you stop doing it. Because you know what? On any given strategy, would the casino close the doors because somebody came in and hit, you know, on... and hit it big on a random game.
Or something.
Yeah. On a slot machine. The slot machine pays out and they lose big time on that slot machine that day. Do they close that slot machine down? No, they keep it running and they know if the players keep playing, eventually that edge will work in their favor. So if you have a statistical edge, you keep employing it. It's like people will say, oh, I'm having a bad trade. You know, oh, I'm losing too much on the day I stop trading. I never do that because I'm trading statistical edges. So I keep trading that day. And a lot of days, like yesterday, for instance, I started the day down significantly. I ended up scratching yesterday. So I clawed myself out and scratched myself out of the hole. If I would have stopped trading at 7 o'clock in the morning because I had a bad overnight trade in Caterpillar and a couple infrastructure stocks, I wouldn't have got my money back. But I did get it back because I'm employing statistical edges throughout the day. Well, I'm starting a big hole today because of GE. Will I stop trading because of that? Absolutely not. I'm going to continue to employ my statistical edges and maybe starts to dig your way out. Maybe it doesn't. I mean, maybe I'm just going to have a really bad run and my 53, 55% edges, the other guy's going to hit, the other person's going to hit and hit and hit. And that can happen. But the worst thing you can do is adjust all your strategies because you had some bad luck.
And I just have to say that you're the best loser on Wall Street. I mean, there's.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no,
inside,
you are.
I'm like looking at that GE. And I'm like, want to shoot GE the finger. I'm like,
no,
so
Dennis,
I don't know
you
about
just,
that.
No, you can come on and talk about it, and you know, that's just the maturation process of, you know, I mean, you started with me a long time ago, but you've just taken things just like to such a far level to, you know, to be able to do this because your first inclination is, man, I'm selling more. I'm going to sell more, and that's the wrong thing to do. You moved on. You covered it, right? Whatever. Wherever it ends up today, it ends up today. But you know what? Your mental capital right now, your approach to the market is it's different now. If you still had that G on, you'd be like, oh, should I put a bit out
at
116?
Yes. You're glued to it. You're right, Joel. You're glued to it. You're like, I can't take my eyes off it. I hope it's going to come all the way back down to flat. You think it's going flat today? Do you think it's going flat today? Do you think they could do a split the company in three and it's going to come back flat? It's probably highly unlikely. It could. Market can do anything. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe it comes all the way back down. I look like an idiot for covering it at 119. But, you know, maybe I already look like an idiot for covering it at 190.
Yeah, who knows?
But it looked pretty good compared to 125. And I'm thinking some financial engineering here, 3-for-1, you know, splitting the company into 3. Give us the news anyways.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if we gave the news.
The news is what you said. They're splitting the company into 3. It's going to end up being a renewable energy and power segment. They're going to combine that, spin that off. The healthcare segment is going to be spun off as well. And what's left is the aviation business, which will be its own separate entity. So aviation, healthcare, and renewable energy / power. Those are your 3 segments for GE. And it's sort of the, I don't know if you want to call it the culmination, but since Larry Culp has been at the helm, what, two, three years now? At GE, and he's been deal making from day one. He's been spinning off assets. They did the reverse, but as you mentioned, and this is sort of like the culmination of that entire effort.
What I will say, and you know, we'll have Kramer come on and applaud this in an hour because it's trading up and he just chases price. But what I will say, Joel, and I think you're going to agree with me here, is they seem desperate to get their stock price higher.
Reverse split?
Like a reverse split that wasn't needed. Like, why were you doing that? Because, and they even said they wanted the stock price higher. They, you know, when you split a company into 3, the stock price is in the short run going to go higher. Does that equal long-term growth? Is that the right thing to do in the long term? I have no idea in the long term, and nobody knows anything. But they know in the short term, by doing this, the stock price is going to go higher. So I guess, you know, I always thought management's supposed to be concerned with running the business and the stock price to look after itself. But in this case, I feel like GE, over the last couple of moves they've made, are more concerned about their stock price than running their business. So I want nothing to do with this long term, you know. But I know when you split a company into 3, it's going to pop up and they can trade anything. So, you know, it's looking good on the charts. It's breaking out on the charts. You can see that technically here. You don't want to be short stocks making new highs on the move. And GE absolutely is doing that, breaking out here this morning. It wasn't before yesterday. It certainly is now. So, but I just think they're desperate to get the stock price higher. I think they need to stop worrying about the stock price and stop worrying about financial engineering and start running the businesses better.
Well,
that's what I'd like to see.
Wouldn't you be desperate if it went down for 20 years?
Well, and maybe that's the thing to do. Maybe it is. I don't know. They've done everything wrong. It used to be Honeywell and GE, and Honeywell showed you what, you know, how to run a business. And obviously, you know, at one point in time, GE was buying out Honeywell. And then
they didn't get
any trust. And GE has went straight down ever since, and Honeywell has went straight up ever since. So they've just done a lot of things wrong over the years. I was a GE shareholder for a long time. You were too, weren't you, Spencer? Weren't you in GE?
I wouldn't say a long time. But
I think I was 7 or 8 years in GE, and it was one of the worst stocks.
Yeah.
Worst stocks. I was in it from like probably like 2002 to maybe like 10 or 12 years, and it was just a perennial underperformer. I think I actually ended up losing money over the course of 10 or 12 years. I remember justifying and saying, well, I got 3% dividend every year, and I've held it for 10 years, so I only lost a little bit, so I actually was still getting paid, but really, that was just been a horrible stock for 20 years. I don't know if this 3-for-1 split or splitting up into 3 companies turns it around.
I'll just make a couple comments. Technically, I don't think you're getting back over 126, but anything can happen. 126.40 is your pre-market high. If I had this stock long, I'd just be laying out offers all the way up. Bigger size, the higher you go. Even 124 looks like a good number. If you're looking for support, this is just 15-minute support. Doesn't mean anything. 115. It's held on the last couple brackets. And then, Dennis, the one thing that is a positive is they didn't split it into 6 parts.
Maybe we're going to get all these companies, and maybe they're all – I mean, AT&T did that, remember, a number of years ago, split it up, and I was long AT&T, and I got 3 companies out of it and a big special dividend, and it seemed all good. We got AT&T Wireless, and we got something else.
Dennis, I'll tell you. You got Lucent. You got Avaya.
I got that, too.
Get Bell Labs?
We got a whole plethora.
It was so hard to get out
of holding AT&T
sold some of it. And I remember doing my taxes, and I was like, oh, my God, what is my basis on this? Because I think Lisa had it from, like, her bat mitzvah or something. I don't know. But anyways.
It was given to her from her bar mitzvah.
Bat mitzvah, yeah.
She has taken too much of her time.
Yeah, let's move on.
Can we go to PayPal?
Yeah, we can go to pay. Yeah, you're right. This is
it says movers. I followed. I looked at the thing and I says movers. I was like, I got a mover. PayPal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. PayPal. I mean, yeah, the earnings. Okay, we'll go there. Earnings last night. EPS. They beat their sales. They missed, and their guidance was not great.
Bill Big D was talking about people who are saying buy this into the report. I don't know if he was listening to Pre-Market Prep Plus, or at the close show, because I don't remember either of us saying that. It got the pop. It's been in a downtrend. Overhead supply. People seeing this at 240 are gasping for air. Oh now you're making a new low of the move, 215.02, 214.53. What's next on my monthlies? I'm just going to go to my monthlies here, and we're below that. Oh, and we're below that. And 206.65, 207, call it, if you're looking for a level. I don't know if we'll get there today, but people buried.
We are clearly back into the market where the strong get stronger and the weak get weaker. And the PayPal has turned. It was Pinterest that turned this entire story around when there was rumor that they were going to pay a ridiculous amount. They say no, and the market still doesn't care. And now it gets the pop. And what do we say? Stocks that are in downtrends, you sell the rip. And holy macro, did you get a rip off earnings last night? Somebody bought this up to $244 last night on the report. What a gift. It was taken away in the next candle. It was taken away 2 minutes later. Down to 235, down to 230, down to 225, down to 215 now. Now you're down 15 points, and people are saying, it's so cheap. I'm buying it so cheap. Cheap stocks get cheaper in this environment. How do I know that? I've learned the hard way again and again and again. And I'll tell you, from a trading perspective, I want nothing to do with it. From a long-term investing perspective, at some point in time, maybe it's a buy. But let's wait until it gives us a point of reference. Let's wait until it gives us something. And if you're buying a long-term account a day before earnings, you know, it's always going to be a crapshoot. So here you are. But I'll tell you, when the stocks are leaning down and they get the pops on the earnings, those pops are met with new sellers because there's bag holders all over the place. PYPL not firing on all cylinders here now. It is now down a cool 100 points from the all-time high. So I don't know what to say. At a certain point in time, value investors will come into PayPal, but I don't know if that's today.
And, well, you kind of got a little hint off the Square report, too, the way Square reacted and was all, you know, it got the pop and the dump. The other thing, too, and, you know, I don't know where you break it down in earnings and everything, but what did it just go up with crypto? Like PayPal and Square? Weren't they like crypto stocks?
Crypto stories.
Yeah, now crypto's ripping it. Well, not any, well, whatever relationship was there. It's going, but keep an eye on your pre-market low. I don't know what to tell you if you're long. I mean, and why does it have to be a buy? You know, that's the thing. Like, maybe it's turned. What, you know, like the whole time on, you know, talking with people on Pre-Market Prep Plus, gotta buy Moderna. You gotta buy Moderna. This is the pullback to buy. I mean, when stocks turn like that,
it's so hard.
I'm not saying short it or whatever, but you know, maybe we'll look back in, you know, 5 years and like PayPal and Square, like, well, who are they? You know, I mean,
and we learn as we keep going here too. I mean, think about, you know, from my perspective, I was like, okay, eventually Ford and GM are going to have the catch-up trade with Tesla. Maybe Ford has to a certain extent. GM has done well, but you know what? The bottom line is, I probably would have just been, and when I was saying this a year ago, I probably just would have been better buying Tesla, to be honest.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, for
like
sure.
You look back, and yes, Ford has had a hell of a run. But if you go back to a year ago, Tesla was 400 to 1200. That's a triple. Yeah, Ford has almost tripled too, so it has kept up, but it was a bold call. And yes, Ford is benefiting from Rivian, which we might as well talk about right now because they just took us there and we're talking
movers.
Might
as well.
I mean, Ford is obviously, I'm still long my Ford, bought it at $7 a year ago. Still a believer that obviously the F-150 is going to be a huge seller for them. We can't even get normal pickup trucks there, and they literally can't. You go in there and you can't get a truck because of the chip problem. I think, you know, it's huge. Is it overdone now? Because, you know, in the short term, because we got, you know, the Rivian stake, they're now jacking it on every time Rivian gets a positive headline, Ford gets jacked up because they do have a stake in Rivian. I think it's overbought short term. I think it needs a pullback here now. I'm not selling my Ford, but I wouldn't be chasing it at this point in time.
I mean, it's just got the momentum. I mean, there's, you know, you're standing, I mean, about 20, made quick work at 20, is trading huge volume. The only thing I'll say about Ford today is, and this is not, it's not a perfect formula, the pre-market highs turns out to be pretty good numbers because people, you know, just for a potential resistance area, yeah, maybe it can rip to 21, but there's so much stock that has to be moved in something like Ford that in the way it trades is like if they want to sell 2,784,000 shares at 2080, they're not going to be afraid, you know, they're not going to be afraid to put it out there. I mean, they know they actually want to sell it at 2060 or better. So just keep an eye pre-market high, 2080. That's where you stand. And then, of course, support, wherever unchanged is, 57 minus 42. What's that, 15? So that's what I'm looking at. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at in Ford, letter F.
Yeah, my thought was, are we going to look back in a week or two and three and think, oh, that Rivian IPO, yeah, that was the top. I think
they've sold 156 trucks, not 156,000, 156 total. It's going to have the market cap of General Motors. You know, we're in crazy town, but I mean, stuff, you know, they're going to grow, and maybe it is going to be the number one truck seller of EV trucks in the future. You know, Ford believes them, they have the stake, but you got to know what you're paying for to a certain extent. I it's not for me.
Shout out to Luke Jacoby. Ford was his pick of the year back in like January.
He must listen to pre-market.
He's got,
because where's our pick in October?
He's got a lot of call options. Good for him. Luke Jacoby, you nailed
this job, Luke.
So congrats to you. It's 8:21. We're gonna have our guest on in around 15 minutes. Dave Duvall, he's a global head of ETFs at Grayscale. So you know we're talking Bitcoin ETFs in about 15 minutes or so. Smash a like for us. You want to talk Roblox / Unity right now?
Sure.
I say we do. Because Roblox is your big game, one of your big gainers of the morning here. Earnings last night, EPS, we don't really care, but it did beat sales. Again, not really comparable. Daily active users up 31% year over year. Think about that for a second, right? We're talking about the reopening trade and everyone going back to living their lives and not being glued to screens all day. Roblox DAUs up 31% from last year. Peak COVID, right?
Wow. I mean, the move, and it was one that obviously not too many people anticipated because this was going down into the report and it was weak, and basically it has gone nowhere, Roblox, for the better part of 6 months. Now you break out and you immediately, one thing to consider if you are trading stocks after hours and you got the FOMO going, bring up, you know, your chart and at least look at where the all-time high is. At a bottom line, look where the all-time high is, because when a stock rallies $25, in all likelihood, it's going to run into trouble where the old all-time high is. And Joel, I don't think this after-hours high is a coincidence. The all-time high, 103.86. After hours, it did sneak up to 105.
Oh.
I'm going to call that within a buck. When a stock's moving in crazy, buck wide, I'm going to say it stalled out right at the old all-time high.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, that's your target. I mean, if you got this thing and you got calls, remember, if you're long calls, you can always short the stock. Because I get this all the time. It's like, I wish the option market was open so I could lock in my gains. Do you know how to lock in your gains when you're long calls? Use your calls for what they're used for. You can actually short the stock against those calls and lock in those gains. Because if you're long the 80 calls and you short the stock at 100 or 102, 103, you just locked in your 22-point gain. So you don't have to wait. Now the thing's 96. So remember, if you are trading options and you're long options, you can use those options for what they're worth. And you can always hedge yourself by just selling the stock short against your calls. And it's the same thing as selling your calls.
Well, it also depends what platform you're on.
If you're on a platform that doesn't allow you to do that,
you should
you should consider maybe if you're doing it as, you know, if you want to get serious about your trading, you should consider a different platform. So, I mean, a lot of short sales, and this is where we look at short interest, and a lot of times those are hedges against long calls, believe it or not. But, you know, nobody wants to hear that. So
there's nothing in here. And the only thing I just wanted to note on this was, and I just looked in Pro. Remember they went down over the weekend? Remember that?
That was like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. No, but yeah. It's just funny. I sometimes, like, I mark, you know, like, where how stocks traded that day.
And what was the news on it when it went down?
It went down, I don't know, just went down.
Like the platform was down for, like, an over entire the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, the what? Roblox this, platform.
Yeah.
You know what, though? This is really, you talk about stay-at-home stock. You know, we really, you know, had this was kind of lumped in, right? Wasn't it? You know, the gaming stocks.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And was it though? I mean, Roblox is like a kid's, like, it's mostly kids on there, is it not?
It's expensive.
Yeah, yes, who's on Roblox?
Yes, it is. You're right.
It's a little bit different animal. It's not like, you know, okay, we can't go to work. We're, you know, going to sit at home and, you know, we're going to play Activision Blizzard games. I mean, I think it's kind of different. I never really put Roblox as a stay-at-home play.
Okay.
But I mean, you could say it, I guess.
You know,
maybe
what
that's why
ask,
it's showing some weakness.
You know who we haven't had on in a long time? And I know his kids have it. Bill Santiago. I remember him talking. He was
Get him on the show. I didn't know his kids have it. Get him on the show.
Yep.
Hey, but
and it is a play on the metaverse too. I'm going to say that as well.
It is. Moving off this too is ticker U, Unity. Did you see that one this morning?
Yeah. And obviously it's software behind a lot of the thing behind the thing, like Jason Rasmussen. Give a shout out to Jason. He's in the chat room.
He's in the chat. I don't know what's going on with that. He got up early today.
He's in the chat here today. But the thing behind the thing, Unity Software, is the thing behind a lot of things. I mean, Pachter was on this show. It was $89. He said, I love this company. I bought it. I sold it at $110. Again, taking my gains way too soon. It's $168. And I'm like, why did I sell that again? Well, I thought it was too much too fast. Well, it was, and it pulled back, but I didn't rebuy. It's always my problem. So
that's like one trick. It's just too hard to like sell it and rebuy it. I mean, I know you do it. I just
hard
prefer,
to do.
Yeah,
and that's where I mess up. I don't do it, Joel. That's my problem. I'm actually pretty good at identifying. I think it's overdone here now, and you know maybe I should sell it, but then I don't get back in, and I'm like, why didn't I get back in? So you move on. You forget about it is the problem. So,
well, then you also
obviously
got
the story is still intact. You know, Unity Software, thing behind the thing, what Jason always talks about. I mean, it's I think the stock's going to be a $200 stock eventually. So I think on pullbacks, you got to be buying you. But it's run a long ways. I don't know where that pullback is. I'd like to be in.
I know what's cooled you on the buying back the stock thing. It was a biotech stock that you had and you sold and then you bought it back. And
I just did it with Penn Gaming. No.
I think you sold it like 120 and then you bought it at 95 and ended up getting taken over at 80. It was a pharma.
There's been a lot of different trades.
And you were like, I rebought it and, you know, averaged up and then it ended up.
I know, I hate averaging. Oh, Celgene.
Celgene. Yeah,
I hate averaging up. And so I had my cost basis on Celgene. I had bought it years ago. It was like $25. And the stock went to 150. It pulled back to 90. And I doubled down. I brought my cost basis up to 60 or something. I like the cost basis from 25 to 60. And then the stock traded actually down after that to like 50. And I was like, how did I take a 400% winner in my long-term portfolio to a loser? You know, so anyways, eventually did get bought out by Bristol Myers, I believe, and it was $100 a share, so I got it back. But I don't like that raising my cost basis that much. It's probably why I won't buy Apple in my long term account anymore to raise up my cost basis, because I don't want to end up being a loser eventually. It sucks at raising up that cost basis.
Just Unity, real quick on the tangent. There's someone not major, I mean, but someone's lurking in the 170 handle, and that's not a bad number if you're looking at your all-time high. Your all-time high, 174.94. Now, this is moving off someone else's news.
Mm-hmm.
I just got an echo now. What happened?
He's gone now.
Okay. What are you doing there, Spencer? But pre-market high is?
We blame Spencer.
171 even.
Wait, do I sound okay?
Yeah, you sound fine.
You just got loud for a second.
He sounds fine.
Okay, sorry about that.
About DoorDash into earnings? People are asking about it. This is your classic, I believe. This is a stay-at-home stock. And maybe they're going to blow it away. I tend to think it's up $3 here this morning ahead of the earnings. We know there's alpha to extract from being long stocks ahead of earnings, although yesterday it wouldn't have worked on this one. This morning it is working. Ah, man, I'd be very, 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 very extra nervous to hold this long into this report. After I saw Peloton, after I saw, well, Zoom has leaked since then. Maybe the expectations are low enough that, you know, obviously some people are going to be thinking along my lines that, okay, well, this is going to pull a Peloton. So maybe you're going to have some people that are betting on the bearish side. And maybe that's going to help it out. Maybe DoorDash makes a difference, but I'm scared to own this one long. I don't have a position, and I don't know if I got the guts to be shorted into the report, but I'd be scared if I was long. Just my opinion, but I look at that Peloton down another $5 yesterday, and I think could DoorDash get Pelotoned? I don't know.
There isn't a lot of history. Sorry, Joel. There isn't a lot of earnings history on DoorDash, right? But what I will tell you is this stock, if you look at the last, it's three reports, right, as a public company. Pretty much without exception, Will just trades down after earnings.
Okay, well, maybe the trend is not your friend. It's going to trade up.
Do they break down the by restaurant? Like, do they ever see statistics like that? Because to me, someone that gets DoorDash for McDonald's, okay, I mean, it's, you know, albeit them take, you know, sneaking your fries, you know, which I used to do with, you know, when I used to get the kids on Saturday night, we go out, I get them the Burger King special. They'd be like, Dad, ate some of my fries. And you spend 10, I haven't been to McDonald's in 100 years, but you spend 10 bucks at McDonald's and you're paying, what, $2.50 to get it delivered and it's going to be cold? I don't understand the concept. Obviously, I'm not trading it.
Do you want me to go on a 2-minute story on DoorDash and McDonald's?
You know what?
This just reminds me of a story. So I won't obviously say the person's name, but friend works at a mental health center, and their inmates there, there's some long-terms that are just in there forever, and they get some apparently they get discretionary income of like $100 a month where they can just spend it on like whatever they want. And I guess this one guy at the mental health center orders like 30 Big Macs every single month, and he has them delivered like DoorDash to him in the mental health center. He sits there and just eats Big Macs for 2 days.
He doesn't give them to anybody?
What's that, Joel?
He doesn't share them with anybody?
I don't think so. I think he just like I didn't know they have like discretionary income. Like obviously, you know, you're in there, but you have. So it's not for everyone probably, but the way, and I'm in Ontario, I don't know if it's like that everywhere, but there's some type of discretionary income they get every month. They get like a little allowance where they can spend what they want. And every single month he orders like 30 Big Macs and just sits there and eats them all. So awesome for like the first 3 Big Macs. And then he'd be sitting there and you're like, I don't know if he eats them all in one sitting or if he eats them all. I think he would probably must eat them over the course of a couple of days, but
maybe that's, he's applied for that's that amazing. Movie.
So DoorDash has a place for that person right there.
Wait,
can't very well go out and get the Big Macs himself.
Wait, this is also off topic, but did you read the article the other week about the guy that ate all his meals at Six Flags for like 2 years?
Oh,
wow.
How do you feel?
He likes Six Flags, eh?
Because he realized if you buy like an annual pass, you get 2 meals a day. And he worked right next to the park.
So he just ate the Six Flags.
Anyway.
What was the show? The Big Mac or the McDonald's show from the guy like 15 years ago?
Super Size Me.
Super Size Me?
Yeah. And then he made a sequel that was all about chicken.
Did he? And apparently all his, after eating McDonald's for 30 days straight for every meal, he was ready to die.
Yeah.
McDonald's didn't like that. You know what? The stock went straight up after that. So it got so much publicity. They're like, oh, this is going to be bad for it. But McDonald's was like 18. Remember that was the back in like 2002 or 2003. That was like McDonald's bottom when it got down to like $18 a share. Super Size Me was going to put McDonald's out of business. And it got so much publicity from that movie that the sales exploded.
You know, this
people
is
going not, out there trying
all right,
to
okay.
eat.
All right.
This is not a good show that Raz is listening to here. Okay,
I think he left.
Okay,
I'm bringing us back. We have our guest in the studio. I'm going to bring him on right now. Dave Lavallo, global head of ETFs at Grayscale Investments. I wonder what we're going to talk about with Dave. Let's bring him on here, Mr. Lavallo. Good morning. Welcome to Market Press.
How are you guys?
doing fantastic. We're a little bit off the rails here, but I'm trying to get back. Listening. So, let's.
No,
start
I was this. Listening. It was fascinating, guys. I was enjoying that. Supersize me right into Bitcoin makes a lot of sense, right?
That's how it go. You can buy your McDonald's with Bitcoin, can't you? When is McDonald's going to start taking Bitcoin? That's what I want to know. When is McDonald's going to start accepting Bitcoin?
I don't know.
Let Spencer take things away here. Go ahead, Spencer.
No, I just want to start with this. Dave, so explain to us, because, you know, Grayscale, you've, of course, got the GBTC, and you've got the Ethereum and the Litecoin trust as well. Explain that you've applied.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
To convert the GBTC into an ETF, explain that process for us. What goes into that?
Yeah, so a lot of times when you talk about an ETF conversion, what we've seen historically is more like mutual fund conversions, and people often equate kind of the GBTC conversion similar to a mutual fund conversion. It's actually a lot simpler. It goes back to our founder of our parent company, Barry Silbert, back when GBTC was envisioned. He really had the belief that this was going to be, you know, a digital store of value. And it was something that he thought people were going to want to invest in. And, you know, as a result of that, he made the strategic decision to structure GBTC exactly like GLD, which is a well-known physical gold ETF, which is structured as a Delaware grantor trust. And so, you know, when he envisioned it, having that long-term view and that long-term strategic view, he structured it with the ultimate goal of actually being an ETF that looks very similar to some of the most actively traded and most successful commodity ETFs in the marketplace. So GBTC is structured as a Delaware grantor trust, and it has a couple of, you know, nuances that make it different than GLD. And so to really transact this conversion or to execute this conversion, a couple of things have to happen. Number one, it needs to be uplisted to the New York Stock Exchange. And the second piece is it needs to, you know, have simultaneous creations and redemption. So, you know, right now there's no redemption function for GBTC. And so once that simultaneous creation and redemption can happen, it will behave exactly the same way that GLD or SLV or IAU, some of the most actively traded commodity ETFs in the marketplace trade. And so it's actually quite simple. It's really a matter of getting regulatory approval.
That keeps the price in line. That's such an important function there for your ETFs.
Absolutely.
So, and you sort of hit on the key point there, which is that GBTC looks like an ETF. And some people probably just assume it is. Some people, frankly, probably don't care that it isn't because it looks like one. And some people probably very much do care about the technicality, right? So can you explain, aside from the lack of creation redemption process that currently exists in GBTC, what are the other differences between that, you know, versus what we know of as an ETF?
Yeah, so with all of our products, we essentially have a four-stage life cycle to them. They start off as private placements, and after a waiting period, a regulatory waiting period, they become traded on the OTC markets. And after a period of time, they then, file Form 10s and become SEC, registered companies. And so that means they're kind of filing 8Ks and 10Qs and, have a number of different disclosures that would equate it to an SEC reporting company. That point of becoming the SEC reporting company is really the penultimate step, with that last and final step being a conversion to an ETF. So, it's interesting that oftentimes I'll be talking about Grayscale and people will assume that we list closed-end funds because, these products can trade at premiums and discounts. But the reality is they're Delaware grantor trusts. They just haven't had that same, simultaneous creation and redemption, which again is what would, optimally keep the product trading in the secondary market on an exchange very closely to that asset value and would preclude it from trading at, significant premiums or discounts. And frankly, that's exactly why we have, been so active in our constructive engagement with the SEC. We've been having great conversations with them for many years about, our investors' desire and demand for a spot Bitcoin ETF. They want that. We're kind of acting on behalf of our investors, and we're engaging with the SEC, and obviously, most recently, have put a filing in with our partners at the New York Stock Exchange to try and achieve this.
They have this in Canada. Have you looked in the Canadian markets? Is Grayscale looking to go over there as well, or have you? I don't even know if you have, because obviously we do have Bitcoin ETFs and Ethereum ETFs that are on registered exchanges in Canada right now.
Yeah, we obviously pay very close attention to what's happening in the Canadian markets. Obviously, there's been some progress in the European markets as well. Those two markets are obviously markets that we pay attention to, but are really focused on the U.S. market. It's obviously where the vast majority of our assets are. And in the history of kind of, the ETF market more broadly, I think there's been a tremendous amount of kind of what we would call southbound flow. When there's liquidity and when there's ticker recognition, we've found that the Canadian market comes to the U.S. market. And I think that's something that we would think would be similar with a GBTC conversion as well.
You, Dave, you mentioned the trading at a premium. The ETCG, also, you're right, also trades at a premium to net asset value, and as I understand it, a pretty big one. And that's a feature, not a bug, right?
That's correct. It's just a feature of the reality of these products trading on the over-the-counter market, still being private placements. They're obviously trading in the public markets, but still have a creation function, or a subscription function without a redemption function. And so ultimately this is a function, this is a matter of kind of supply and demand and fixed number of shares in the marketplace. And supply and demand will, deem whether or not this product is going to be trading at a premium or a discount. They behave like a closed end fund in that sense, but they're not closed end funds from a structural perspective.
We're on the line with Dave Laval, Global Head of ETFs at Grayscale. Getting away from the ETFs and getting away the way the currency is trading and everything, can you put your futuristic goggles on for me? And, when the old a larger part of U.S. dollars transactions is going to be in Bitcoin? Because that's the thing to me. Like, I carry my credit cards. I'm the only person that probably carries cash. I mean, eventually it has to be more transactionable. What do you see? And better yet, I know there's companies working on it. What do you see? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? What do you see, Dave?
No, goodness, that's a tough one for me. You have an ETF guy on the line here. What I would say to answer that question is, I think Bitcoin has proven itself to be a store of value. In terms of some of the other products in the marketplace and digital assets and digital currencies in the marketplace that are really more focused on, transactional function, I think Bitcoin has proven itself to be a store of value. And as a result of that, is really finding a place for an allocation in investors' portfolios as such, right alongside their gold allocations or other allocations to different asset classes. And so the reality that digital assets are now being viewed, by not only self-directed retail investors, but all the way to the largest institutions in the world, all of these investors are looking for an allocation to digital assets and digital currencies as a real asset class and as a segment to their portfolios. And so I think that's a really a critical component to, you know, how this asset class is going to develop. And I think there's certainly going to be opportunities in the future for different assets or different currencies to be more transactional in nature. But certainly as we look at Bitcoin and some of the other more mature coins, it's really a matter of defining a store of value.
Dave, good question here from our chat from TJ Mosley, because you mentioned you'd have to uplist to the NYSE.
Right.
Why not the NASDAQ?
We've been a long partnership with the New York Stock Exchange. Okay. They've been good partners with us, through all of our regulatory conversations. It's Cboe and NASDAQ and NYSE are three listing venues that would be, you know, national exchanges that we could contemplate our uplisting. We've had a really strong relationship with the New York Stock Exchange. Absolutely nothing against Cboe or NASDAQ or their platforms. But the New York Stock Exchange is who we've partnered with, and the New York Stock Exchange with their ARCA platform, which is their ETP listing platform, is who has submitted the 19b-4 filing on our behalf.
And then I imagine you're feeling just better about this whole thing now than you were 2 months ago before we got our futures ETFs, right?
Yeah.
So now that we have those Bitcoin futures ETFs here in the U.S., I guess how do you feel about the likelihood? Because like you said, it all comes down to SEC approval here and getting them on board. So
right.
How are you feeling about that right now?
Well, look, we certainly, Chair Gensler about 3 months ago, you know, at the Aspen conference came out and made his kind of first statement around comfort with futures being held by a 40 Act structure. And so everyone was, you know, taken aback by those comments. But, you know, look, the SEC has been very consistent in their messaging. And that's been and very transparent in their messaging. And so, you know, a few firms filed for futures-based products in a 40 Act wrapper. Obviously, the ProShares product was approved first. Absolute record inflows, which was fabulous to see. And then, frankly, to be honest with you, from my perspective and from the industry's perspective, the entire marketplace responded incredibly well. And that product has been trading very efficiently with tight spreads in the secondary market. Now, there's obvious differences between a futures-based product and a spot product. We certainly prefer and think that the spot-based product is a better structure. Futures-based products are inherently more complex for the asset manager to manage, and then also for investors' experience in their interest in kind of, you know, precisely tracking the underlying asset.
Yep.
But we were very deliberate in when we timed our filing. And once the SEC had approved these futures-based products, we felt like it was the perfect time for us to re-engage formally with a 19b-4 filing, which would allow us to get back into a really constructive dialogue in the public forum, allowing us to engage with the SEC and the staff, and to find a path forward for this spot product. Again, our investors want this. That's where the demand is. And so we're acting on behalf of our investors and, you know, really amplifying their voice. And fortunately, since that 19b-4 filing has been, you know, publicly noticed, we've actually seen some you know, positive comments where investors have come out proactively and really kind of exercised their own voice in support of this filing being approved.
So October 19th, I believe, was the filing, maybe give or take a day or two. And you've got a 75-day review window, right?
Well, it's a little bit different. There's different types of filings with different, public kind of notice periods. So for this particular filing, it's a 45-day period. That 45-day period could be extended by another 45 days. Then there's another notice for proceedings, which could extend it for another 90 days and then another 60 days after that. So
what?
Sorry to confuse. It's a 240-day, essentially comment period in four separate stages. I wish this could be a 75-day waiting period with immediate effectiveness, but that's not the structure that we're in. Part of the reason why I think there's some confusion around that is with the Bitcoin futures product in a 40 Act wrapper fell under a rule that is commonly known as the ETF rule. And that ETF rule essentially allows immediately effective filing. So you file for a product that falls under the ETF rule, also known as 6C11. And after 75-day waiting period, that product becomes effective and it can start, you know, trading and be listed on an exchange. This particular product doesn't fall under the ETF rule and therefore requires more review by the SEC. And so there's some statutorily, there's some different time frames and waiting periods and comment periods.
You started off saying how simple this was, but now I'm now more confused than ever.
Look, guys, it's not a simple thing when you do something novel in the markets, okay. But we're committed to it. We're excited about it. You know, again, we've been having a constructive dialogue with the SEC for years now. We'll continue to do so. And listen, we're sympathetic to the SEC's position right now. This is not easy stuff to deal with, but we know that we have a strong voice on behalf of our investors. We have over $40 billion that are tied to GBTC. We certainly want to see this conversion happen. Again, we want this product to be tracking the net asset value of Bitcoin very tightly. We know that if it's in a spot ETF wrapper, it will do that. And that will allow our investors to have a real true experience in their exposure to Bitcoin.
Got it. Dave LaValle is the global head of ETFs at Grayscale Investments. Dave, a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us today on Pre-Market Prep.
This is great, guys. Thanks for having me.
And I also want to mention Grayscale will be at the Benzinga FinTech Awards today. They will be on a panel about how retail investors change the market at 4:10 p.m. BenzingaFinTechAwards.com for that. All right, we got 10 minutes left into the show. And
how did they not get the ETF? I mean, you know, these other companies. I mean, they've been around forever. I don't know.
Well, it just hasn't been approved. So,
you know,
Well, it's complicated because you're talking about a spot, you know, going off of spot Bitcoin, which is not that ain't so easy. We got to talk about LIDAR. We got to talk about LIDAR. We got to talk about LAZR today. It is an absolute monster. What is the stock up now? Like 38% this morning. It's actually come off its highs, I think. But Laser announced they announced that they were selected by NVIDIA for the NVIDIA Drive Hyperion Autonomous Vehicle Reference Platform. So LAZR, how high did he get this morning?
Got $30 right on the kisser. You're now $6 off that. So it's going to be a little bit tougher sledding now, as you've seen sellers have come in. I'd be looking for a quick target here. I'd be looking to see if it can even get to 2680. That's 260 away. Trying to find support at 24, but that's all you could say. 30 right on the kisser, pre-market high.
And then I'm just going to rip through these. EVgo, EVgo was your big gainer yesterday. They had another headline, actually two more headlines this morning, a partnership with Uber and a partnership with General Motors, and we're just whip city here.
The EV trade is so hot right now. I don't know like where the, you know, if it's, you know, all these things are overbought, you know, all these things are circuses in town probably, you know, at a certain point to ring the register, but I mean, they're in total rocket ship mode. These things can go anywhere they want here at this point in time. So maybe you're trailing up your stops. Just, I mean, you know, everybody thinks when the stock goes from 10 to 18, it's going to 50. Sometimes they do. A lot of times they don't. So, I mean, you got to know why you're in it, but wow, it's a big move.
You did hit 19, but you're not, you know, the bulls are not giving in yet. So a little support at 18 to see if we can get through 19. If you're really, really bullish and 19's not good enough target for you, your next monthly high comes in at 21.95. And Spruce had a nice rally here. Did we have some data?
I think we did. I think we did.
Kind of dovish data, it must be.
I feel like we did at 8:30. We were talking, you know.
CPI, was it? I wrote it down. It was,
no, was CPI, Joel. PPI.
PPI. It wasn't CPI. I would have had to go wide. But we rallied. We've rallied back up. I mean, buy the dip wins again, right? Isn't that, it's a SPY? I should stop doing the herb, just start out buying the dips on SPY. I'd probably make more money.
Yep, up to 250.
Buying every dip on SPY. Is this the trade that seems to keep on paying? I don't know when it ends, but wow.
All right. AMC is actually quiet this morning, right? After their report, a lot was said, but I think all it really matters.
Buzzword Central. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean,
they seem to be in the business of buzzwords. I tweeted that last night.
Yeah, what they're okay. So the numbers are that their losses narrowed dramatically. They
only lost, I think, around 200 mil compared to 900 mil the year ago quarter. But then, like Dennis said, it they talked about making their own cryptocurrency for some reason and accepting crypto as payments and the popcorn
buzzwords.
Thing and I don't know.
NFTs,
yeah,
three buzzwords. They tried to hit everything. Like, I think that they looked through and they said, well, what is everybody's talking about in the stock market right now? We're going to talk about all those things on our conference call. It's ridiculous, to be honest. It's honestly just ridiculous. But the whole thing, whatever. I mean, it doesn't go down. It's holding up. The technicals are still okay. The pullback probably gets bought. The apes are showing they can control things. So props to the apes. I mean, the fundamentals make zero sense. You know, they're trying everything they can. You know, obviously using buzzwords because they know that the valuation doesn't make any sense. The company knows that. You know, I see that Nicole Kidman commercial. They obviously dropped a lot of money.
Well, which one, Dennis? There's like three of them.
Yeah, I know, because they got a lot of money. So, I mean, this is honestly unbelievable that, you know, the market has held this stock up as long as it has. So AMC and GME, props to the traders that have been able to control price here, because I always, you know, was under the impression that eventually, you know, these pops on, you know, these ridiculous moves can come back down to earth. But in this case, AMC and GME has held up very well. So the apes are showing that they're holding strong, and obviously they're getting more apes. You know, the one thing to consider, and, you know, the apes don't mention this, but obviously talking about the AMC apes, you know, that we're holding. So they're of the impression that as long as we hold, the stock can't go down. But really, for the stock price to go up, you need more people buying. So it's impressive that it continues to go higher. And, you know, especially in the last week or so, because you're obviously finding more buyers in there. So I'm impressed that it's held up as long as it has. Am I coming in here and investing in AMC? No, because it doesn't make any sense. But I'm not going to argue with people who made money with it. You know, good job.
A lot of people, I'm sure, would like to see that close at 45.06. That was a close from yesterday. That's a few bucks away. Kind of hanging out. I don't think, I mean, right now, I would keep an eye on yesterday's low at 41.77. You're still a buck above that. Sniff 42 in the after hours. So I would say apes are still in control unless you take out yesterday's low at 41.77.
And then someone in the chat mentioned AMD. We can do AMD and NVIDIA together.
God, AMD.
Impressive moves. The strong get stronger. The weak get weaker. It's a type of market that we are in. At one point in time, Intel and AMD were the same price. They were both $75 a share, and Intel's fallen $25 from there. AMD's doubled from that point in time. The strong get stronger. The weak get weaker. We're back in a Momo market. For a lot of 2021, we were in a contrarian market. That is not the case in the last few weeks. We have moved as traders. You have to identify when the tide has turned, when the overall market has turned. It's a Momo market. This earnings season changed it to a Momo market. So what does that mean? It means that not necessarily chasing works, but I want to be definitely buying just stocks that are, instead of just randomly buying every dip, I only want to be buying dips on stocks and uptrends right now. So because the strong get stronger and the weak get weaker. So that's how I've adjusted my trading over the course of the last few weeks. As things have changed, I was just buying every dip before and selling every rip because you're kind of in this market. But now you're in the trending market. So now you're buying, if the way I'm approaching is I'm buying dips in stocks and uptrends, and I'm selling rips on stocks and downtrends because those trends continue to persist, at least in this market that we're in the last few weeks.
Let's rip through a couple more here quick, and then we got to end the show at 9 o'clock today. Let's do, oh my gosh, we didn't even get to Panera. We didn't talk about Robinhood. Smile Direct Club is your big loser of the day.
Earnings. I got lucky in this one.
You did?
Yeah, because I had this in the long, in the swing trading account. When everything was getting, you know, short squeezy, and we were talking about these stocks, and I had it in that swing account. I've been looking at it, and I'm like, there's no way I'm holding this sucker through earnings. So I sold it, like, and I almost forgot about it. Like, I knew I had it, but I was trading busy. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got to sell. I wrote it down. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to sell my Smile Direct. And I sold it at 357 at 526 or something, because I was like, I don't want to hold this through earnings. I had it in there because it was one of those stocks. Some of these smaller stocks had been picking up some life as of late. And this was one that, you know, was, I thought it in the last couple of weeks. I've had it for a couple of weeks in there. You can see the consolidation that I was looking at, Joel, low fives. And yeah. I got up at a couple of times. I could have made some money on this thing. Went up to 577. I bought it around 5.25. I basically scratched the trade. But thank goodness I sold that thing right before that report, because I had a bad feeling that wasn't going to report a great number. So lucky on that one.
Yeah, the earnings missed, the sales missed, and the guidance was extremely light. And actually the same thing for Blue Apron. Those are your big losers of the day, is Smile Direct Club and Blue Apron.
Smile Direct Club, all-time low, under $4, 364. Yeah, 364. Or if you're looking to cover short, Blue Apron. You were talking about that stock ripping the other day.
Because it was.
Okay. Blue Apron. All right. Yeah.
When the stocks,
look at it.
Okay, it did. It came back. I'm just saying what it's doing now. $7. I see $7. I see
this
a low
breaking trend. So one thing to consider: this is a stock in a clear uptrend. You're getting a dip. So what I just said, buying dips on stocks and uptrends. I'm just not 100%. I like the trend when it's breaking. So now you don't have, you're losing trend. So that's the difference. If it was, you know, like a trend down to like 9 on this, you know, maybe, or 850, but now that it's come out with the numbers and it's breaking trend, is it earnings on it? I don't follow the story. Is it earnings on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, when you're trading something technically, you don't usually want to hold it through a fundamental report. So, you know, just know why you're in it. If you're in it for the story, you're in it for the earnings, you're in it for the company, it's a different story. If you're in it because the chart looks good, I know JC Peretz, I think he avoids the earnings too, you know, when he's trading. If you're just in it just for the technicals, fundamentals matter when you come to these reports. So you got to be careful, you know, that you don't get stuck with something from technical trade and then caught from fundamental news.
All right. I know, Spencer, you got to wrap. I just I want to thank Irina and Brian for both going to premarketprep.com and still purchasing the educational videos. And
oh, we have a couple more people. Yeah, yeah, we have a tab there, educational videos, so you can purchase these indefinitely now, or first two. And we're going to have another event, which we're going to start advertising. December 11th, it's going to be on order execution. You know, we're talking about slippage. We're going to talk about, you know, because executing your trades, more looking at, you know, how do you, and we're doing some tape reading, but more like when you're getting down dirty, you like the stock. Okay, now how do I buy the stock? What do I use? What type of order? How do I get in there? That's what we're going to talk about, is the execution. Because if you can reduce your slippage, you know, and get better execution, you can, some of those edges you can improve, obviously. Yeah.
And that, and also just like how to just be quicker, right? How to not spend a minute.
For sure.
How to not spend a minute on your trade ticket, right? You know?
Yeah, like, so I go, you know, and obviously BrightTrain was set up maybe a little bit faster, but if, you know, and obviously I have some automation too, but on my point and click trades, like I see, I go basically from idea generation, you know, to execution in a lot of my trades in under 5 seconds. So my I bring it up and I can buy my stock in like probably under 2 seconds, maybe under a second. I just go, if I want to go boom, boom, one click, bang, done. I go hit, boom, done. So it's really fast. Like,
whoa,
point
was that just you that just sold everything just now?
Oops.
Hey, I'm gonna hop. We missed a lot of tickers. I'm gonna hop over to premarketprep.com. Premarket Plus, join me, Spencer. We'll
all righty.
See you at the close. Thanks.
No, at the close today from you, Joel. I got the FinTech Awards.
Did you send me a Google Calendar invite
for the awards
or uninvite?
I did send you an uninvite, I think.
Okay.
All right. Hey guys, we got earnings today.
I'll do it on premarketprep.com.
All right. This is your calendar for today. After the close, nice. Look, done Tuesday. Cool. We talked about DoorDash, right? You got Coinbase, Fubo, Wynn, Unity. Big names reporting tonight. Yep. Have them on your radar. Oh, yep. Crap. Disney's tomorrow? I did not know that.
Disney. House of Mouse is House of Mouse Wednesday. House of Mouse
Wednesday. Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah. That's,
oh, yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, it's Tuesday. Yeah. Holy crap.
Ooh, I
yeah.
think I knew that, but I forgot.
Well, I'm looking at the after hours. I see multiple sessions here because I look by session. So I have the after hours session on Tuesday. You have the morning session on Wednesday. So I see it as almost three sessions away, even though it's tomorrow. People look at one day. I look at three sessions in every day, the pre-market session, the regular session, and the after hours session. There's three sessions in every day.
Whatever gets you through the day. All right, Dennis.
I
have a better
banners.
Rest of your day, man.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, you can turn it around. If anyone can turn it around, it's Dennis. Hey, we are going live right now on the Benzinga FinTech Awards. What is this, like the 7th annual Benzinga FinTech Awards? BenzingaFinTechAwards.com. It'll be right here on YouTube. This stream will end and redirect you to the actual show. Again, BenzingaFinTechAwards.com to see the whole agenda. We're spending the whole day celebrating all the innovation happening in FinTech, financial services, trading, investing, crypto, NFTs, a whole day. We do this every year. It's one of the biggest days of the year for our company. And hey, if you're in New York City or in the area, check out the after party. I was not invited, but
I'm not in New York. So you're invited. If you're in New York, check go to BenzingaFinTechAwards.com to learn to see how you can do that. And on that note, I'm ending this show. The Benzinga FinTech Awards are live. Please hit that like button and remember all the information on our show is for informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Have a great rest of your day. Let's go start the Benzinga FinTech Awards.
On November 11th, join us for Benzinga's 7th Annual FinTech Awards. It's going to be a day full of networking, deal-making, and recognition of incredible achievements that you won't want to miss.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.